KNOM Update News. I'm Lorelei Kinnean, and it's 9:02. Tuesday's hearing by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee in the state legislature ended with a brief discussion of House Bill 181, the Mining Tax Revenue Bill. Chief sponsor, Representative Neil Foster, told the committee the bill brings a portion of profits from gold mining back into Nome to handle costs from the expanding sector.
In 2011, the Department of Natural Resources conducted an offshore mineral lease sale off the coast of Nome. The sale prompted a spike in demand for docking at the Nome Harbor, and it was space the harbor doesn't have and can't afford to build. In the year after the mineral lease sale, dockings went from 271 to 436. While the state received revenue from this, there was no framework to help the city with the new infrastructure that was needed.
Testifying to the committee by phone, Joy Baker, the project manager for Nome's port, described the unfunded costs brought on by the current mineral rush.
Nome has experienced an influx of offshore and placer miners. These miners have provided an economic boost to local merchants and the local economy, but at the same time have adversely impacted some of the city's services to the community. Revenues for staffing associated with the seasonal influx of miners is not sufficient. In addition, the city of Nome has expended $302,000 for the growth of our port facility and to expand facilities to support the gold dredging fleet.
House Bill 181 reallocates a portion of the revenues from the mining in and around Nome. Though numbers are not yet final, up to 25% of taxes collected on dredging operations would be channeled into local coffers. The share of the mining revenues currently goes into the state's general fund. The measure is modeled off a revenue share structure used by the commercial fishing operations in the state. Diverting a portion of the taxes collected on gold mined will not bring in enough money to cover the Port of Nome's increased costs. For one thing, dredging operations netting less than $40,000 in revenues pays no tax. That covers a lot of the small independent dredgers accounting for a large share of Nome's harbor traffic. And for big operations in the Bering Sea, those bringing in more than $100,000 a season, the taxes are modest, $4,000 ahead of 7% of profits. To give an example of what this means for different gold dredging operations in the Bering Sea, four of the five crews featured on the television show Bering Sea Gold in the 2013 mining season would have paid no taxes to Nome because their returns were too low. The real money for Nome would come from taxes on lease sales and their renewals. According to Paul LeBoule, chief of staff for Representative Foster, it's an unresolved question whether DNR will retroactively direct funds from the 2011 lease sales back to Nome. Baker emphasized the dependability as a much-needed safeguard against fluctuations in revenue sources.
Sharing portions of state revenue from mining developments with local communities in a predictable fashion will reduce the need for local governments to impose their own targeted taxes on the industry and allow local communities to provide services to all entities in the community.
House Bill 199 will be reread on the floor after minor changes are made to the language in the bill. It's expected to go before the House Finance Committee later in the session after clearing the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Small businesses in the Bering Strait region pay some of the highest energy costs in the nation. Now those businesses have the opportunity to receive free energy audits. Two energy efficiency advocates are in Nome this week. They're working with the Bering Straits Foundation and going door to door talking with small businesses about qualifying for the audits. Funded by a USDA grant, the commercial audits analyze a business's energy use and then provide a list of improvements to increase energy efficiency. If a business installs the upgrades, Christina Whiting helps the owners apply for USDA funding to partially reimburse the cost of the improvements. 44 energy audits are available for small businesses throughout the Bering Strait region. To hear more information, there will be a meeting tonight with the Nome Chamber of Commerce at 6 o'clock at the Nome Mini Convention Center. And tomorrow at the Nome Mini Convention Center, the Alaska Food Policy Council is holding a meeting is holding a meeting to gain insight on local food systems. Gary Ferguson is a board member for the AFPC and will be attending the meeting.
The questions that we're asking is, what's working in your current food system? What isn't working? What challenges do you face every day?
A food system is the total steps that get food from its source onto the plate, and most of Alaska's food system begins outside the state. Ferguson says 95% of Alaska's food is imported from other states or countries. This outside reliance threatens Alaska's food security. If a natural disaster or other event severed supply lines, Alaska would quickly run out of food. And the places that would be hit the hardest, Ferguson says, are rural areas where food is flown in and stores quickly deplete their stocks. Through holding these meetings, the AFPC is gathering local input to devise more secure food systems throughout the state.
We want to make sure that there are systems in place to make sure that food is available for folks. And ideally, we empower folks with tools to be able to grow their own food or how to hunt, fish, gather their own food as well, to supplement nutrient-dense food on their tables.
Tomorrow's meeting in Nome is the first in a series of 7 meetings the AFPC is holding around the state to collect on-the-ground input of Alaska's food situation. This gathered information will be used to help legislators and local and tribal governments create policies to address Alaska's food needs. The meeting is tomorrow night from 4 to 6 o'clock at the Nome Mini Convention Center. Sarah Ahrens will be analyzing ice cores this year. She's a PhD candidate at the University of Michigan, and the ice cores she drilled herself in Antarctica in November and December of last year. She's looking at the ice to study paleoclimatology, the history of the climate at the Taylor Glacier. What she will find could be helpful in understanding what will happen to the climate in Alaska, Greenland, and the rest of the Arctic once the polar ice cap melts.
We haven't started analyzing our samples yet. It's going to take like about a year or so. But once we have our information, we can kind of see how the local climate in an area changes with decreasing ice shelf extent. And the idea for this research is to kind of extend it or use it to predict how places in the Arctic, which are experiencing decreasing sea ice and ice shelf extent, how their climate is going to change as a result of that.
The Roth ice sheet in Antarctica started melting about 20,000 years ago. Ahrens gathered ice cores that were up to 55,000 years old on up to new ice, ice that was just forming on the glacier she camped out on for 4 weeks. And what she will be looking at is dust that has accumulated on the Taylor Glacier over time.
I'm not just talking about like dust that you wipe off of your countertop. Deserts all over the world, you know, like the Sahara Desert, for example, you know, they're huge sources of dust. And when they have dust storms, the dust gets blown up into the atmosphere and it gets up into the upper atmosphere and can travel around the globe. And it gets deposited in places like ice sheets and glaciers and oceans.
And dust is deposited on and in the Taylor Glacier. Ahrens explains the dust can tell her a number of things about the climate history in Antarctica. One is where the predominant wind direction was during a certain period of time. Different continents have different types of rocks, and looking at the isotopes in the dust can tell you where the dust came from.
So you can say, well, 20,000 years ago, we know that the, you know, predominant wind direction was from southern South America to Antarctica. And then you can look at dust that's, you know, 30,000 years old, and you can say, well, then the predominant wind direction changed, and then it was coming from Australia or something like that.
And the dust will tell her about the history of the temperature on the Taylor Glacier. The concentration of dust during a specific time is a really good indicator of temperature, simply because when it's colder, there is more ice on Earth and more exposed continental shelves and lake beds. Therefore, you'd have more dust accumulated during a cold period in history. Ahrens hopes to complete her PhD thesis by the fall of 2015. The ice cores she drilled in Antarctica are currently en route to the University of Michigan and should arrive by April. When she's done with her research,
I just hope when I'm done analyzing the samples, I hope our results tell us something related to our hypothesis. And hopefully I'll be able to come back and present the data to someone or some people in Alaska and, you know, try to help communities in Alaska be more prepared for what's to come. So that's my goal.
Sarah Ahrens grew up in Anchorage. Her mother is the late Martha Ahrens, former Bering Straits Native Corporation and Unalakleet Native Corporation board member. Learn more about her research by Googling Sarah Ahrens Antarctica blog. And listen to Profiles today after this newscast and the weather, also after the 6 p.m. weather. The price of gold in New York is down $23.70 an ounce to $1,245 even. Sun officially 30 degrees at the KNOM studios, 12 and a half minutes after 9 o'clock.